Welcome to Building Ideas, exceptional people discussing inspired experiences that create an enduring impact on our communities. Building Ideas is presented by MSA Design. To learn more about MSA, visit us on the web at www.msaarch.com.
This is Bill Baker. Thanks for coming on the podcast. We have a great guest today who is not only an exceptional person, but from what we believe is an exceptional organization in a movement, the YMCA. John Heater joins us today as the Group Vice President of Operations for the YMCA of Greater Cincinnati. He has worked for the YMCA for 20-plus years with past service to the Gateway Region YMCA near St. Louis, YMCA of Southwest Illinois, Jackson, Mississippi YMCA, and the Edwardsville YMCA. He is a graduate of Greenville University, the Panthers, and holds a BS degree in education and ministry and a master's in education. He has been married for 17 years, a proud husband and a father, and has four children, all while serving the YMCA. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Building Ideas, an exceptional person, John Heater. Tell us a little bit about your path that brought you from Illinois into the YMCA and where you are here now at the YMCA Greater Cincinnati.
Appreciate the invite today. So I was 15 years old. And I needed to get a job. My dad, son of a pastor, and I'm the youngest of four, and mom stayed home with the four kids, and toughest job ever, by the way. And yes. Dad said, hey, I need you to get a job. And so I'm a freshman in high school, maybe a sophomore, somewhere in there, and a couple guys on the football team said, hey, we've got an opening at the local Y. You want to come work out in the fit center? And to be frank, I tell this story at a lot of public events. It's a part of my journey, but as a 15, 16-year-old girl, or a guy, I'm not a girl, that was weird. but here's the funny part of the story, is it was either the YMCA Fitness Center or Dairy Queen flipping burgers. And I asked the guy, I said, well, where's the better place to meet girls? So the joke became, I chose the Y because it was a better place to meet girls. So that's how my Y career started. And I'm sure most 15-year-old boys think that way. But I joke about it because then I quickly fell in love with the organization, its history. A lot of people don't understand that the Y started in 1844 mm-hmm. in London, England. So we've been around a very long time. And so I'm from Southern Illinois, mm-hmm. just outside St. Louis. And so I did that all through high school. I did it through college. Was working full time for my local hometown Y right after college. I was working for a church as well. And so did that. Loved it. And then had the opportunity to move up in my career in the Y. So I moved to Jackson, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. Interesting story is I never thought Southern Illinois was viewed as the North. But when you move to the South, I think anything that has north of Mississippi, I think they consider the North. So in the sense that we were the aggressors, right? We were the funny ones. So I became a Yankee. That was the first question. They said, do you know what the difference between a Yankee and a damn Yankee is? And I said, no, ma'am. They wanted a job. And she says, well, a Yankee is someone who visits, but a damn Yankee moves here. I was like, oh, okay. So I was 24 years old. I was a child care director of a pretty large sized branch there and did child care and teens and sports. It was not uncommon in the Y to wear multiple hats. So continued the journey from there. Ultimately moving back to Southern Illinois to work for the YMCA of Southwest Illinois. Had the pleasure of being there for a long time. In 2000, I believe it was 2011, the YMCA of Southwest Illinois merged with the YMCA of Greater St. Louis. And so then it became the Gateway Region Y. So with their merger, which for us Y nonprofit people, it's an interesting experience that a lot of us don't go through, but it's a great experience, learned a lot. But I get, I get asked a lot how did I end up in Cincinnati? And a couple things. A mentor of mine who was our chief operating officer when we were at the YMCA of Southwest Illinois, a guy by the name of Ed Neal. Ed Neal, in his career timeline, was the group vice president at a YMCA in Cincinnati called the Blue Ash YMCA. And at the same time, right as Ed left the Blue Ash Y, a new VP came in, and his name was Jorge Perez for the YMCA of Greater Cincinnati. Well, when I joined the YMCA of Southwest Illinois, the CEO was a guy by the name of Jorge Perez, and the COO was a guy by the name of Ed Neal. So both my supervisors at leading that YMCA organization had been the vice presidents with the YMCA of Greater Cincinnati. And Ed retired. So I literally have Ed's job right now. It served as the group vice president for the YMCA of Greater Cincinnati, and I office out of the Blue Ash Y. Ed had that exact same role for about 10 years.
In the same office, I'm sure.
Same office, same. I think we still have the same furniture. And then Jorge served as a group vice president in some other capacities with the YMCA of Greater Cincinnati. So they'd always talked highly about the YMCA of Greater Cincinnati. And then, so in 2018, May of 2018, I got a phone call. Well, I started my journey here in Cincinnati. But Jorge Perez is our CEO here in Cincinnati. They had an opening, and so we had a conversation about me joining the team here in Cincinnati. So went through the process, interviewed, and was thankful to get the job. So
that's awesome.
That's how I ended up where I'm at.
Welcome to a belated welcome to Southwest Ohio. I know I'm going to guess you must be a Cardinals fan, so it must be interesting going in.
Diehard Cardinal fan. I was excited about you know, it's interesting. When you live in Southern Illinois, just outside St. Louis, and you're a Cardinal fan, it's great. You tease people, more Cubs fans than anyone, about being a Cubs fan living in St. Louis. Now, I'm on the other end of it. I live in Cincinnati area, and you got Reds fans. And what I found to be amazing is you can be a Reds fan and still have the same opinion of Cubs fans, no matter where you live. So totally fine with that. But the only time I root for the Reds is when they're playing the Cubs. So.
That's all right. We'll take it. We'll take it part of the time. So I know you mentioned Ed and Jorge. Any other influences or people who've influenced you on this path to where you are today?
I've forgotten more than I can remember. I would tell you that there's been amazing men and women that have been a part of my journey. I can think of three more that I would add, and that's outside of my dad, who's still the hero of my life. But there's three people that have played huge instrumental roles in my development through the years. Two of them were through my college years. So I played golf collegiately, and my golf coach was an amazing coach of people. He probably couldn't fix your swing to save his life, to save your swing, but he could coach you behind the ears, between the ears. And he really took a young kid in college, taught me about golf, but really taught me about what it means to be a man of character and be a man who works hard, gives his best. And then another guy by the name of Tom Morgan, who was actually our vice president of student development of the university. So Jack and Tom were ushers when my wife and I got married.
Oh, okay.
We have a daughter named after Tom. Her name's Morgan. So his name's Tom Morgan. So they've just been influential men in my life to help me be the best I could be. You know, and I would say on a professional side, I served under a great executive in the Y that really taught me about leadership. His name was Jared Beard. And Jared currently serves as the chief operating officer for the Gateway Region YMCA in St. Louis. But I would say on a Y career path, Jared taught me about leadership. He taught me about what it means to really be fanatical about your work and to drive excellence. So I'm very thankful for those three other individuals that I've been able to serve with through my Y career, and it really paved the way and allowed me to get where I'm at now.
We're in an exceptional event now, right? This whole coronavirus, COVID-19 has impacted every industry, every institution, private, public, around the world. Can you talk a little bit about how that's had an impact on the YMCA movement and how you think maybe the YMCA movement has been uniquely equipped to help serve into your mission through this?
Absolutely. So first, Bill, you and I have had this conversation multiple times now about really the misunderstanding of the Y. People see us as a gym and swim, and those of us in the Y, we're prepared for that. In fact, we all have our elevator speech ready to go. Mm-hmm. I just always tell people that my elevator speech is for a building that's about 1,000 floors big. Mine's a little longer than normal. But here's the reality is when crisis happened, when our world was turned upside down, the wise response, and is always our response, is how do we show up and serve? As a leading nonprofit, not just here in the U.S., but worldwide, it's our job, it's the expectation of the YMCA and our movement to show up and serve people. Mm-hmm. So let me kind of help, for anybody who's listening, I want them to understand how do we get to that space? Mm-hmm. Right? How do we go from the, you look at us and see gym and swim, but there is so much more. And so where's the disconnect? What did we do? So one of the great analogies we like to talk about in the Y, so we'll talk about our mission statement. So our mission statement is to put Christian principles into practice through programs that build a healthy spirit, mind, and body for all. And then we do that, our cause, which defines us, is to strengthen the foundations of community. So our job, our call to action is to show up and serve. Now, how do we do that? What does that look like? How do we put meat on that? And here's what I always tell people. There's this, under this Christian principles idea, you don't have, that doesn't mean you have to identify as Christian. It doesn't. You know what it means is, in fact, if you listen to the last piece of our mission statement, it's for all. It's the Christian principles that drive us and is our guide on how we serve people. So there's this beautiful picture in the Bible, and I like to use this analogy a lot. Jesus is talking to folks, and he's talking about when he comes back. But here's what he does say when he comes back. He says, he says, hey, where were you when I was thirsty? Did you give me something to drink? Or when I was hungry, did you feed me? If I needed clothes to be clothed, did you put clothes on? Right? And he's talking to me, when I was in prison, did you come visit me? When I was sick, did you take care of me? That's the driving question in this idea of Christian principles. How do we show up and love our neighbor? Mm-hmm. So when the pandemic hit, we didn't ask the question, how do we survive financially? I mean, we did. I mean, every organization has to ask that question.
Sure, sure.
But at what cost? So our response was always and will always be in the why. What's the greatest need and how do we show up and serve? And so the decision of the YMCA of Greater Cincinnati was to begin offering pandemic care. We knew that if we were being locked down on purpose to create the word I'm looking for is to keep the burden off our healthcare system. So the more people who get sick, we know what everybody was saying, right? Stay home.
Sure.
So our emergency rooms are not overrun. So so our doctors and physicians are not overrun. So we knew that child care centers were going to shut down. The Y being one of the largest provider of child care services in the country, the conversation was a no-brainer. It was, we have to show up and serve those that are being called to serve the front line. So we started off phase one was to say to any emergency worker, anybody who was deemed essential that still had to go to work. If you're a police, if you're, if you're a physician, if you, whatever those services were, we wanted to make sure that the last thing they needed to worry about was quality childcare. And so we said to our community members, look, we went to the hospitals and we've had, we have a partnership with different hospitals. We said, look, we'll provide care. We'll take care of your staff's children so they don't have to worry about that. They can stay. They can still stay and serve if the outbreak gets worse. And so, for us, it was never a question how we would serve or if we would serve, but it was more about how.
Sure.
And so over the last couple of months, we're proud that we've been able to step in that space and provide countless families with child care services. I think the last I saw was around 350 plus families. That's not children, but yeah. Families were provided child care options through that.
And I'm sure that was really made a big difference, didn't it, in the medical community and the first responders community in Cincinnati?
It did. And we were thankful that we could. Mm-hmm. That's the point.
Yeah. So I know moving forward, as you begin to pivot back towards regular operations, how does that look for you all in the Y Cincinnati moving forward?
So today we have a pre-week and pre-week two. So today begins our pre-week one phase of reopening. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we've been working on this for about a month. Mm-hmm. We've got a group of YNCA leaders, staff that have worked very hard at making sure that a safety of our members and our staff is a top priority, but we understand the need to be here. Well, we know our members want to do that, but here's really the focus for us is we were not created to be alone. Mm-hmm. What we have found is that it's our members. What they've missed the most is the relationships and belonging that they find when they come to the Y. Mm-hmm. It's their friends. Mm-hmm. They want to be with the people that they love. And so we're working through a system where, like most businesses, we are making sure that safety is looked at. So everything from, you know, checking in to coming in the facility and maintaining social distancing to, you know, encouraging our members, cleanliness, the right kind of, to be honest, I've learned more about different kind of cleaning chemicals and solutions than I ever thought I would. You know, for us, it's how fast can I turn over a treadmill if a member comes in and works? And, you know, we're going to ask all of our members to clean before, you know, wipe down the machine before and after. But the reality is that's the third precaution. We're going to wipe them down too. We're going to clean them thoroughly ongoing throughout the day. But it's how do we make sure that our members know that we are making their experience a priority. And so we've got a long list of checklists that we're going to do, but really we just want to see our members, and our members want to see their friends.
Yeah.
Right. They want to be together in relationship. And so we've got the precautions, you know, we're taking probably a little bit on the high end of, you know, we could do this, but let's wait. Because we want to make sure that our members know and the community knows that we're doing our part to help.
Talk a little bit about, you know, the YMCA, the movement, you know, nationally, regionally, locally. It's been in a bit of a missional shift, a realignment in recent years with the increased competition from private fitness and private gyms and corporate fitness. How do you see the Y responding to this and being positioned for what's next post-COVID?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So big picture, and I would say that this is a lot of just based on my experience and what I've learned about the organization over 20 plus years, is when you're as old as we are and you go back through our history, as I mentioned, this isn't the first time that the Y as a movement has had to shift or pivot to meet the demand or meet what's going on. And so, you know, when people think about, you know, if you go all the way back to, you know, the last major pandemic that we had. So, you know, 1918 flu, you know, the Y was there serving. We did what we needed to do. If you go back to World War I, we were the largest provider of support for the World War I effort. If you go back and look at pictures of World War I, you'll see not Red Cross emblems on people's armbands. You'll see a red triangle. This is our original Y logo. Mm-hmm. So we have been around shifting, pivoting, and serving for a long time. What is going to shift for us, though, is the greater demand on volunteers, right? So like most companies and organizations, we kind of, over the last 40 years, got into a business model. Even as a nonprofit, we got into a business model of staffing, right? We've got this business engine and membership. We're going to ask these people, you know, we'll just hire more people. Mm-hmm. What this shift is allowing us to do is to keep our core business practice of fitness, youth development, this idea of healthy living, social responsibility, and youth development. Those won't change, but how we do that and then how we ask the community to partner with us is going to majorly shift how we do it over the next couple of years. Let me give you an example. From you know, over the last couple of years, you've seen a major change in the fitness industry to this virtual on-demand cut.
Mm-hmm.
Not an area that the Y ever really, not that we didn't value it, not that we didn't look into it, but from a cost perspective, was it worth our investment? The virtual on-demand side takes away from, we always kind of thought, well, it takes away from the member engagement. That one of, you know, people building those intimate relationships with friends at the Y.
Yeah, that community, right? That Y community,
right.
You get at
so
your
community
branch.
Community could be long.
Sure.
Now we're noticing, though we still have the opinion on how community is formed, we're noticing that there is ways where we can get into that space.
Mm-hmm.
For those that maybe aren't comfortable to come back yet, mm-hmm. but still engage with their community. Let me give you an example. We've got a group. You know, the Y loves to serve its seniors. And our senior, what we call active older adults, love the Y.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the intentional efforts that the Y made was to connect seniors through Zoom. Mm-hmm. Teach our members how to use their smartphone to connect with their group exercise class. Even if they weren't even exercising. It was just teaching them. So we compiled all the people that used the class. And then we went out and said, hey, here's an email. Here's how you do it. We'll get on the call with you, and we'll show you guys how you can connect with your friends. One of the things I think that will change that is exciting for the Y is how we are going to help bridge communities together, or people together, you know, bring communities together in a way that we're not used to. I think we're excited about that. We're excited about program offerings and how we can shift and pivot to meet the needs of the community. That's going to change. I will tell you, the YMCA that I'm used to for the last 20 years, in some ways, is going to fundamentally change.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's going to change for the better.
Hmm.
I think more people, and you and I have talked about this, Bill, but more people are going to see the Y for the organization it really is. Yeah. It's the organization that's going to show up and serve. It's mm-hmm. a community-based organization that's designed to help meet the needs wherever they're located. So let me give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you lost your job tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
but you long for relationships, you long for belonging, and you long to achieve some goals, whatever those goals are. You can call the Y, and no questions asked, we're going to make sure you're taking care of financially.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to say to you, look, can you afford $5? Okay, let's talk about that, right?
Yeah.
And that's for your whole family.
Yeah.
Because we believe that what you need most is to be around people. Now, how you social distance, that's up to you. But whether it's through digital or through in-person, the Y is going to make sure that we're providing a place for everybody to belong. So there's a lot of non-specific answers in there. But what I will tell you is the business model will shift and it'll change, but I think it'll change for the better.
Mm-hmm.
So when I call members, I'm going to say, hey, would you volunteer? I need you to volunteer for the Y Day. Well, why? Well, I need you to help pack food, right? We've got a group of families that need food. You know, let me throw a couple of numbers at you just so people will understand. I pulled this up and I find it fascinating. Now the numbers are a little outdated, but this will give you some context of
mm-hmm.
What we're talking about. So I ran this report on the 27th. So 4/27/20. This is our relief efforts to date mm-hmm. on that date. So it's almost a month old, right?
Yeah.
Food distribution, 37,000 meals.
Wow.
To be exact, 37,676 meals. That was a month ago. Pandemic childcare, meals for children, 25,000 meals.
Hmm.
Meals for medical staff, almost 5,000 meals.
Hmm.
Children cared for, over 420 kids cared for. That was a month ago. Right?
Wow.
So, and I keep going. Academic support while kids were in school and mom and dad were working as essential personnel, over 5,000 kids, some way, some shape or form, received academic support through their Y.
Hmm.
Seniors, over 5,000 meals. Check-in calls, over 6,000 check-in calls on our seniors.
Hmm.
So, I keep going. Virtual demand. So, on-demand views of our programs and services, 43,000. Facebook Live views, 30,000. Spiritual moments. So weekly, we would roll out a spiritual moment, over 10,000. So I think fundamentally, right there, it shows a difference on how the Y showed up in certain,
yeah.
The greater Cincinnati area.
Hopefully people will see this impact that you guys are having on the communities. I mean, that's just a great story, John. Appreciate you sharing.
Well, one other quick thing on that.
Sure.
You asked about the national level. You're right. There's kind of been this, what's going on for Y nationally? What does that mean for my local Y? here's one thing that here's really the main answer. Whoever hears this, this one within this year, it's the local wise job to work through their local members, their local board members, their volunteers, their business leaders. It's the local wise job to ask the question, what is the community need? National office, they have their own job, and their job is some best practices. They're a resource. There's some, you know, other things that they provide the local Y, but there's no governance. The national Y does not oversee and or supervise or dictate what the local Y's do. The local Y's are typically ran by a board of volunteers and a CEO, just like any nonprofit. And it's the local wise job to ask that question. So if I show up and ask Bill, what's going on in the community? What do you think is a primary need? Mm-hmm. And you identify a need, then some way, some shape, some form, the why has to show up and step into that space. Mm-hmm. Now, we never want to duplicate programs or services, but it's the local wise job to really determine how they serve moving forward. Mm-hmm. So now more than ever, we need individuals, business owners, business leaders like yourself within your sphere of influence to volunteer, to serve on boards, to help tell us what are you hearing out there and what do you think the why can do to step in and serve the community that you're a part of. And so that's really the national view to the local view. It's the locals that really have to step in and do the work.
And so as you look back over your career, you know, your career, your life before college, growing up, you know, what's a key place, space, or experience in the built environment that's inspired you, John Heater?
What would you call it? Would you say maybe a life-changing moment?
Sure. Yeah.
Number one, this is part of my why story. So when I go speak at community events and talk about inspiring others, I struggled in school big time. I was a three-sport athlete, but academics was not my thing. One of the life moments was, I remember parent-teacher conferences, fifth grade. My fifth grade teacher told my parents the best I could ever be was probably a garbage man. Now, let me preface that by saying there's nothing wrong with a waste disposal job. Mm-hmm. It's a good living. It's respectable. Every job is respectable. I just encourage people to work hard. But you don't tell a fifth grader that that's their future. And so as I went through, I graduated high school. I never thought I'd go to college. Didn't think I was good enough. And I was working in a factory. And I realized that I could do it. That I could go to school and move, you know, get a dream job that I'd love to do. And so for me, hearing that story later in life, because my parents didn't tell me, as a fifth grader, they didn't tell me that. But they told me that after I graduated high school, that was what she had said. And I said, I want to go to college. I want to get a degree. And, you know, so that drove me. So ever since I found that out, one of the driving factors in my career has been I have to be the best. I have to give my best. So that was one of them, where it really shaped what drives me and motivates me. The second was, in high school, I got called up to play varsity as a freshman, varsity football. And I noticed I said I got called up. So when the time came, the coach asked me a question. He said, are you comfortable? Do you know all the plays? And I said, I think so. And I never played a game my freshman year. Now I played JV, but I didn't play varsity game. Because I answered the question in a way that was insecure. I wasn't confident in my answer. Did I know all the plays? Absolutely. But I was afraid to tell the truth, you know, to say, yes, I know, and then screw up. So what I learned from that is always speak truthfully and honestly, and don't be afraid to make mistakes if you give your best. See, I was afraid to make mistakes. So I told them, I think I knew the play. And I was afraid if they put me in and I didn't, that I'd screw up. But I did know the play. And I wasn't willing to take a risk. And so I've made it a point, because I, so I missed out on an experience. I've made it a point as a dad, as a husband, and as a professional to be confident in what I need to do, what I know I need to do, and then give it my absolute best. And that's driven me forward. And there's been some success there. I mean, we all have failures, but it definitely was a couple key life moments that have kind of helped shape who I am.
And I love that, you know, you think about those kinds of memories, those experiences when you were in fifth grade and then when you were a 14-year-old in high school, how that one conversation, right, has an impact on the rest of your life in a positive way, even though it was negative at the time, right?
Yeah, I asked him at the end of the season. I said, Coach, you pulled me up, but I never played a game. He said, well, I asked you if you knew the plays. You said you think so, and I wasn't willing to put somebody in the game that wasn't sure. I wasn't committed to it. And I said, well, I was committed. No, he said, but you weren't committed to yourself. And I was like, okay, that'll never happen again, Coach.
And then moving past so that, you paid.
When my boss called me and said, hey, I need you to work on a facility reopen plan because of the pandemic. The answer is, you bet, and I'll have it to you. When do you want it? Friday? I'll have it to you Thursday.
Yep.
And it'll be the best. So it's those kinds of things that that experience has driven me to.
That sounds like a classic Midwestern small town guy response, you know, the part of the country where we, you know, they look you in the eye and say, can you do it? And you say, yes. And then you get it done.
Yeah, I'll do it. And I'll do it better than most. Now, that doesn't mean I actually do it better than most. But that's playing sports my whole life. That's the kind of thing I learned, right? Competition's everywhere and I love it. I don't think it's a bad thing. I want to, here's what I tell people all the time, Bill, when I hire people in the why. Look, the why, I believe that the YMCA is the greatest organization out there, second to the local church, but they have two different roles. So that's like saying, I think that Sam's Wholesale is better than Walmart. Well, they're really two different things.
Yeah.
They both sell things, but it's different. So I'm saying that I believe that the Y is the greatest organization out there that's community focused, that helps support people on any faith journey. Whereas the church has a different role. So I tell people when I hire them at the Y, I said, look, I believe the Y is a great organization. Therefore, it demands excellence at all times. If you want to work here for a job, this is not the place for you. But if you want to work here because you want to be a part of something that's excellent, that's going to change people's lives in the community, then this is the job for you. But it demands excellence at all times. Because the members in the community deserve that. And they deserve somebody who works at their local Y, who's going to show up and love them at the greatest capacity they can. When I have members that are in the hospital, going back to that story of the living, I'll go visit them in the hospital. Find me a gym owner, a fitness center, or a country club pool whose manager, if you will, is going to show up at the hospital just because they haven't seen one of their swimmers in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
That's what we do at the Y.
That's great. That is good stuff, and I think that captures the essence of the Y as a movement. You know, it... And as we, you know, one of the things we talk about is enduring impact on, you know, on this podcast, and you've touched a little bit on it here, and I, and you may have already answered this, but I'll ask the question again. You know, in your career and life path, you know, from college at Greenville and to Jackson and in Southwest Illinois and St. Louis area, what have you learned or seen that could help other organizations or individuals have an impact? Like if John Heater, coach, executive, inspirational figure, leader comes in, you know, what are some of the things you would tell any other type of an organization they need to do to have an impact?
Yeah. So I spent 10 years doing wilderness education and leading folks on backpacking in the mountains. And when you go hiking, I don't know if you've been hiking, there's a rule. That's not a rule, but what they would say is a good practice. Is where do you put, if you look, let's say you have 10 people in your group, where do you put your best hike, the person who can hike the fastest, and the one that hikes the slowest? Now, you notice I didn't say the best hiker and the worst hiker. No. All 10 of them have a role to play in this process of hiking for 10, 12, 15, 20 days. All of them have different roles to play, different strengths, different skill sets. So where do you put your best one to set the pace? Well, here's what I've learned. Is you don't take your best fast hike, that person, you don't put them in the front, you put them in the back. Mm-hmm. You take your slowest and you put them in the front. They're going to set the pace for the whole team. It's the coach's job or the leader to push the pace, mm-hmm. but not to drive the pace. Because I had a boss tell me, Ed Neal told me one time, he said, John, I appreciate the way you work. You work fast, you work hard, and you get stuff done. And you lead, you're honest with the team. But one day you're going to turn around and there's not going to be anybody there because you're working at a pace that others can't. Mm-hmm. And you're not able to at this time. You've got to, as a leader in an organization, just a servant to people, because the greatest leader out there was Jesus, who led by example. He was a servant leader. He led at a pace where his folks that he was charged with taking care of could go with him. And so I don't care what organization you're in, it's the leader's job to identify the strengths in their team, push the pace, but take those in any category and let the one that maybe is a little slowest, let them lead the group, because doing it together is way better than doing it alone. So I don't know if you've ever been hiking.
Oh, yeah.
First year ever I went, I was leader of the day. So my job was to be the one guy out front. Now, here's what people don't know about hiking in the mountains. Is that means you get all the cobwebs in your face, right? All the spider webs that are formed over the trail. You get to get the spiders on your face and the spider webs. You're the one that's looking out for baby rattlesnakes. And you're the one that's looking out for wild boar trail, because they're pretty dangerous, or elk, whatever. It's your job to look out for the team. But if you don't watch your pace, next thing you know, you turn around a corner and you're all by yourself. And that's when all of those things that you're charged with looking out for your team can attack you and hurt you as a team. So the analogy goes back to, we have to work at a pace, serve at a pace, encourage at a pace, love at a pace. It brings people with us along as we go. And that's what I've learned. For me, that's my style. That's the way I want to. And I want to be that one that's in the back, cheering on those around me that are learning how to love, care, and serve people.
That is good stuff, John. The hiking analogy, I think, is a whole new, that could be a whole line of business for you on the side as far as an executive coaching model.
Well, I'm a big reader. I'm sure you've read it or not. I encourage you, but Simon Sinek's Leaders Eat Last is a fantastic book that really challenges us to think. In the 80s and 90s, when you read books from that era, leadership books sound a lot different today than they did then.
Yeah.
And, the best leader I've ever seen puts his people first. And that was the example of Jesus. So for me, that's just an important piece. How do we love, care, and serve people as a leader?
Well, John, I this has been phenomenal conversation, and you've had some great nuggets, and really appreciated you telling us your story of Illinois kid to Mississippi to back to Illinois and now to Ohio, and we're just really grateful you came on the podcast today. And
yeah, I appreciate it.
I can't wait to tell everybody the story, not only of you, but also of the good work that the YMCA movement does in our community.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and look forward to hearing it and connecting, and if there's anything that that the Y can do to help serve the community, don't hesitate to call.
That'd be great. Well, keep us posted as things come along, and we'll be anxiously awaiting the reopen of the YMCA Greater Cincinnati.
Will do. Thanks, Bill.
All right. Thanks, John. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on today's podcast. Building Ideas is presented by MSA Design. To learn more about MSA Design, visit us on the web at www.msaarch.com.